Brian Had a Dream, 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hi, once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome to the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this, our 50th episode, we will be previewing the 2017-2018 Oscar field and doing a top five of one of the already announced honorary Oscar award winners, Donald Sutherland. What top five roles would Brian assign to that actor? But before we get to our big topic and that top five, we want to thank you for following us, listening to us, sharing this time with us for 50 episodes now, and ask you to continue to do that by following us on Twitter at 10K Movies, T-E-N-K Movies, or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com, where he also writes some about these movies and where you can also see this podcast posted.
And to put this in perspective, this is our 50th episode, roughly 30 minutes each. So at this point, for those of you who've listened to every episode, you've spent a day of your life listening to us. So just to let you know and remind you that that is how you have spent one of the days of your life is listening to Ben talk about movies.
That is an inspiring, encouraging, kind of scary thought, but we do thank you for being with us. Brian, before we get to all that other stuff, tell us, where are you on the quest and what is your latest movie?
I am at, let me look at the number here, it is 88,310. The very last movie I saw was a Warner Brothers short from 1939, The Good Egg.
Say more.
Well, it's in that they had a doldrums period. It's just Porky was on his way out. They had kind of played that character out from his initial run. Bugs had not yet premiered yet. Daffy is around, but they were still trying to find their voice. This one is one of the ones that doesn't really have a primary character in it. It's just sort of a throwaway short cartoon. So it was okay, but it's. They're all indistinguishable, really, from that era. They haven't quite found their groove. They haven't found their voice yet. I think that really – there's a reason why Bugs became sort of the mascot. Cause I think once they discovered that character, I think they really hit their stride creatively.
Now, that seems like an interesting piece to be watching. Are you kind of moving your way through that particular era?
Or is it been
genre right now?
Well, I have been going through – partially because I know they're short. so I have been going through the Warner Brothers cartoons and seeing what I can find online and just going through those. It's a lot harder than you might think. I think there are nearly 1,000 of them. So there's quite a few. In the 30s, probably about mid-30s on, they were putting out somewhere between 30 and 40 a year. You know, this is a weird time for Warner, and in some detail, they're clearly trying to kind of copy Disney somewhat. Sometimes they're trying to be their own thing. Chuck Jones had not yet arrived on the scene. Tex Avery was there, so you see some of that and some of that style. But like I said, Porky was there. He was the first mate. Well, they had a character or two before Porky who were not worth really mentioning, and they'd rather you forget too. Porky was good, although it's funny if you watch them kind of sequentially of how even from then, like in 39, Porky's probably 6-7 years old at that point, and they slimmed him down considerably from his initial choices. So even they felt uncomfortable with what they were doing in the early 30s. And, you know, you can see some characters that are sort of Bugs prototypes, but Bugs himself hadn't come around. Elmer was not yet Elmer, like he was this other character that is clearly Elmer Fudd, but he's not yet the Elmer we know. And most of the other characters we know had not yet premiered. There's a blog that I can recommend that I find sometimes that I usually read after I watch one. It's called Mostly Mary Slightly Looney. And this is a guy, and it's a blog where that's what he does. He has been, I don't know if he's finished or not, but he goes through every Looney Tunes and he does a deep analysis of each one, talking about it. It's fascinating.
Well, it sounds like during that era, they were padding their stats. You're trying to pad your stats. And that leads us into this new semi-regular feature that we decided to do this fall, this football season. And that is that we, in each recording, we'll talk about our most recent Auburn football game and what film we might compare that to. So the game that we saw last night, at the time of this recording, was Auburn versus Mississippi State. And my comparison for a movie for that game, I was debating between two options, and they were The Expendables and The Kingsman. And the reason I was debating between those two is that in that game that we saw in Auburn and Mississippi State, and in those two films, you see a lot of explosions.
Mm-hmm.
See fascinating, kind of exciting, whoa kind of moments, as you do in a lot of action movies. You spend, you know, a pretty good, fun, solid hour and a half, 2 hours, you know, just enjoyable kind of time in the theater. But you also know the movie maybe is a little bit flawed. Not everything quite as perfect. That's how I would compare this football game. Auburn looked great. There were some things that I'd like to see more of, like running the ball a little bit better. I think ultimately I'll go with comparing this game to the Kingsman because I'm looking forward to the rest of Auburn's season, much like I was looking forward to the Kingsman sequel. And after I'd seen Expendables, I was like, I don't really need to see Expendables 2. So I'd go with the Kingsman on this one.
The Expendables is a trilogy. So just to make sure that you know that.
It's going to be a quadrilogy from what I understand, really, too. But anyways.
Oh, I don't doubt. I'm going to go ahead and compare it to Armageddon. You know, it could have, you know, it could be a disaster. If we had lost, it would have been a disaster. But luckily, Bruce Willis inspired the good guys to go and destroy that asteroid and show it who was boss.
And, you know, and Jared Stidham also kind of, you know, young Ben Affleck. So there you go. All right. Well, let's move from that. As you know, Ben Affleck also multiple-time Academy Award winner.
I think I just casted Gus Malzahn. I think I just casted Bruce Willis as Gus Malzahn.
Let's put that aside. Let's move on now into our big topic. Looking at the Oscar possible nominees for the next Academy Awards ceremony. We're moving into that season where you're starting to see all the trailers and posters for Oscar bait, and you're starting to see announcements also for some particular Oscar categories like the Honorary Award.
Some of the nominees, like the Best Foreign Language Film and the short films, they'll be shortlisted sometime either this month or the beginning of November, so within a month, where the Academy will put out the 15 to 20 that they say, hey, the nominees are from these 15 or 20, and then they'll narrow it down to five by the time the ceremony rolls around. So in some ways, you know, you'll already know if you're a lot of those type films, their expectations will be dashed or whatever within a month.
So what we really kind of want to do is maybe just kind of take a look at kind of the major categories. Best picture, director, actor, actress, and spend a little time with each one of those. What maybe could be nominated, what looks like it could be a strong contender, what's gotten some buzz, and that sort of thing. And then we'll move on into our top five for the honorary award winner that's been announced, Donald Sutherland, and Brian's top five film roles for him. So Brian, where do you want to start on this? Do you want to maybe just kind of start at what films have kind of caught your eye so far that you would say are Oscar bait?
I'll start it with a little bit of a preface and say that for me, because I try as best as possible, and I've not yet been able to actually seal the deal and get this done, but I try to watch every film that's nominated in all categories before the ceremony. and I'm not alone in this. There are a lot of people that do. There's a phenomenon called death racing or whatever. Now, I don't know how they do it. I think some people wait until the nominees are out and they say, I'm going to watch all the movies from that point. Me, I know that if I started then, I'd never be able to get it done. So I usually, at this time, November 1st, I start kind of making a game plan and I start looking at a couple websites to see what the front runners are. And I try to you know, go ahead and bank as many of those as possible so that when the nominations are out, I know I only have, and it's typically going to be the smaller films, your foreign films, your short films, those type of things. But I can have a good many of them already in the bank done. So, and I usually find, and I've done this several years, I find that October 1st is a good time to sort of focus in and narrow that down. Most, if not all, of your fall festivals have concluded. So you kind of know which films are gaining the buzz and all that. And you have a better idea of films that maybe in July you would have thought would have been contenders have already come and gone, and we realize now that they're not going to make the cut. So, you know, so that's what I do. And usually, like, the big Oscar kickoff is the Toronto International Film Festival. That's the big kickoff that sort of is the beginning of the season that leads us into it. So usually the website I go to, my go-to website for this, and there are others, and I look at others, but it's IndieWire. That's the website that I kind of like, and I go to see what they're gonna say. And right now, you asked which ones. A lot of them I don't really know much about right now. I mean, I kind of know they're out there. A couple ones that have been out for a while that seem to be hanging around getting some buzz is Get Out, the horror movie by Jordan Peele. And it is a timely film, and I've seen it and enjoyed it. Let's see what else.
We mentioned in our summer review, we mentioned Dunkirk is the lock.
Dunkirk is
my sense is that's the only lock right now.
I haven't seen Dunkirk yet, although I agree it's probably a lot. One movie that seems to be kind of hanging around there is The Big Sick, which is sort of a smaller film that came out in spring, but it seems to be a possibility. Comedies are much harder to get mm-hmm. to hold on to, that kind of momentum, but it seems to have some of it. And it wouldn't surprise me if it got like a writing nomination or something, but not one of the big ones.
There's also, I know, a couple that trailers I've seen that seem like, you know, if you catch the right thing, they could get Oscar buzz. Maybe not for Best Picture, so maybe we talk about these a little bit later in other categories, but Battle of Sexes, about Billie Jean King and that famous tennis match that she had.
I'll say this. I like that movie. Well, I haven't seen it. I like what I'm hearing from it, but I think Emma Stone having won last year, she's probably, it's unlikely that she's going to be able to sustain a second consecutive Best Actress nomination. Not impossible, but unlikely. Steve Carell as Bobby Riggs is a possibility, but from what I'm hearing, he is getting rave reviews for Last Flag Flying as a supporting actor in that movie, and I think he'll be nominated for that and possibly win. So I don't know that he'll also get. It's difficult to be nominated for two movies the same year. It's happened.
The other movie that Lott's seen a lot of promos for recently has been reviewed pretty well too is American Made with Tom Cruise. Again, that might garner him more of an actor nomination than a Best Picture nomination. But those two to me seem to be the ones that you know right now are kind of starting.
Yeah, it's awesome. So hard, you know, because a lot of these movies, you're just going on what your gut tells you about, because not many people, if anybody, have seen them yet. Right. One movie that I think I'd be surprised if it didn't get some, because I've heard such wonderful things about it, Darkest Hour, which has Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from what I can tell, I'd be very surprised if he was not nominated, and I think the movie will probably carry over too. Whatever reason, this appears to be the year of World War II, kind of non-traditional World War II movies,
mm-hmm.
or you know, not what you normally think of, and you know, and don't count out, you know, especially considering how the nomination process is handled. Don't count out the Academy going for movies specifically designed to like irk our president. So you know, if a movie has a message in it that you know Trump will respond to. Don't, in some ways, yeah, it may not win, but they may very well try to troll him in a way by giving publicity to a movie they know he would hate.
Last one before moving on to some of the other categories, maybe, and just some initial thoughts. Apparently, I think we talked about this too when we talked about Daniel Day-Lewis and his mm-hmm. next upcoming project, this Paul Thomas Anderson
Phantom Thread
fashion movie. You know, Daniel Day-Lewis, Paul Thomas Anderson, you got to think that's going to be in the discussion.
It certainly is. You have to think he's already
best picture as well as best actor.
You have to think Daniel Day-Lewis gets some serious play, unless it's just a dud, but you can't imagine it's going to be.
Yeah. So let's move on. We mentioned a couple of best actor possibilities. I do think, you know, Tom Cruise might get, you know, some buzz. If the movie doesn't, that might be a way they try to honor that film in some way, American Made. You mentioned Steve Carell in
Fast Five.
Yeah. What is that supposed to be about? What sort of reviews?
I think it's got Bryan Cranston and Lawrence Fishburne. And Steve Carell. And I don't know a lot about it. I just know it premiered in Toronto. People loved it. And apparently Steve has a heartbreaking scene in it. But I think Bryan Cranston, one of the characters, they're all three were in the Vietnam, served in Vietnam together. And one of them, and I don't know which one it is, but their son just recently died in Afghanistan. So now the three of them are reunited at his funeral. And it supposedly the end is heartbreaking, but And Steve Carell was the star. I mean, he's just everybody's just raving about his performance in the movie. So I just think it feels like he's at that point where he could very easily he has transitioned now to serious actor. You know, you look at the roles he's had post The Office, and it's been increasingly quirky at best, but no more slapstick. You know what I'm saying? He's moved away from that sort of and been successfully able to not be cast into that role, only typecast into that type of role, like Brick from Anchorman or whatnot.
Yeah. To your point also about maybe some roles that could not necessarily tweak our president, but also play to the very real themes that we have been experiencing these last few months, particularly around issues of politics, mm-hmm. racial politics, that sort of thing. To other roles, Chadwick Boseman will be playing
Marshall,
and my guess is that will be one that would be really possible. But probably, because this is just an Oscar thing, Gary Oldman is Winston Churchill. I would say until we know about Daniel Day-Lewis and what he does, I would Daniel consider Day-Lewis Oldman the front runner.
Oh, I do too. And Daniel Day-Lewis may be nominated, but I find it'd be hard for me to believe they're going to give him a fourth Best Actor award when no one else but him has three. I just don't think not that that should matter. If he's the best, he's the best. But I think that that's going to play into people's mind. Gary Oldman has no win. When you think about it, you think, you just think another movie that's going to be nominated for something. And he may be nominated for Best Actor. He could possibly be nominated for Best Director, depending on how it's perceived. The Disaster Artist with James Franco, mm-hmm. which is a passion project of his about the making of literally the worst movie of all time, The Room. And he's getting rave reviews for it. It looks really quirky and weird. And you know, it's a sort of like inside baseball thing the Academy loves about, you know, even though it's about a horrible movie, but it's sort of like behind the scenes thing that they just love doing. So I think he'll be nominated.
Let's look at then, you know, Best Actress. What do you kind of know about that category?
I don't know a lot. I know that from what I'm hearing, Annette Bening is in a movie called Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. And from what I understand, she plays an Oscar winner from the 50s, Gloria Graham. It's based on the last years of Gloria Graham's life. And, you know, I think Annette Bening is one of those people that most people in Hollywood want to be able to say Oscar winner Annette Bening. She's been nominated two times for Best Actress in both times. Well, she's been nominated more than that, but two times that she should have won. Both times she lost to Hilary Swank. And I don't think Hilary Swank's on the going to be nominated this year. So I think, you know, she could very easily, if she's nominated, the momentum for her could carry her through to the win. Another one that I'm seeing a lot of is Judi Dench as an older Queen Victoria in a movie called Victoria and Abdul. Everybody loves Judi Dench. I mean, it's hard not to. And it would feel like sort of career achievement award for her if she won. I'm seeing I'm hearing some good things about, and I know I'm going to butcher her name, but Saoirse Ronan, the Irish actress, who's in a smaller film called Lady Bird, this possibility. I'm really intrigued by this movie called Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. I don't know if you've heard about it.
Yeah, with Frances McDormand. That's what I was going to say. I've seen a lot
about it. It looks powerful. I mean, it looks really powerful. And, you know, I like Frances. She already has one for Fargo and pretty much an all-time iconic role for, you know, that I think when most people think of her, they're only going to think of Fargo. But it'd be nice if she won, but I don't know enough about the movie to see if she'll win. Emma Stone, of course, but that's a possibility. I think Meryl Streep is a possibility for the post.
Yeah, I want to talk about her, just like Daniel Day-Lewis. She's in something. That's another one that people don't seem to know much about, but it has all the makings of...
Oh, it has all the makings of...
Tom Hanks, yeah. Meryl Streep, Steven Spielberg.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can see the poster that comes out after the Oscars, all those nominations.
Yeah.
Can't you?
You certainly... Meryl's in a film that's going to be hard not to recognize. She has 20 nominations. I mean, she gets nominated for stuff that other people would never get nominated for because she has cachet and clout, and 20 nominations is, I don't think we can overstate. This is like somebody breaking Bonds' record with 80 home runs. Okay.
Well, it can be, you know, also the film itself. It could be a dark horse in some way.
Good. You know,
because if it's, again, the timely nature of that with kind of our conflicted relationship with the media and the media's conflicted relationship with the culture.
I'm with you. I mean, that
could kind of steal the day.
I'm with you.
If you were going to make any predictions on any of these categories right now, you know, you had to life or death hit this button. Do you feel what do you feel most comfortable in saying this is going to win?
I'm by no means the all-time a fantastic expert, but I feel this sort of narrative building. I think Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill is going to win. I feel it coming, and I'm hopeful that it's true, but I think Steve Carell is going to win for Last Flag Flying. And like I said, if she gets nominated, I would be not shocked, but I would think Annette Bening is going to win because I think people want her to win if she gets in the nomination. Mm-hmm. So those are three right now off the top, you know, just thinking, I think that'll happen. I think Christopher Nolan will finally be nominated for Best Director. Don't know that he'll win, but he'll finally get a nomination.
If I had to make one prediction, I probably be Gary Oldman would win.
Oh, I know. I think so.
Dunkirk is Best Picture would be probably my second. And even though we didn't mention this category, I think probably Best Original Screenplay, probably going to be Get Out. Jordan, they're going to find a way to recognize Jordan Peele.
They're going to find a way to recognize him. That's true.
So speaking of recognition, again, Donald Sutherland going to be recognized. We know that already. So let's move into our top five and look at the top five Donald Sutherland roles. Now, I've got to be honest. Most of my familiarity with Donald Sutherland comes in fits and spurts, and most of it's over the last 10, 15 years or so.
I think he's sort of
supporting roles than leading roles that he may have.
He has sort of become that sort of like cryptic older character that you're not sure of his intentions.
If you can't get Michael Caine, get Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, he's sort of become that sort of go to for those type of movies, and I'm with you on that. Okay. So I'm going to go top five roles. These are not, and I'm looking at these now. I have his movies ranked, but I'm going to limit this to just say, first off, let's give a brief discussion of his career. Not discussion, but brief listing of his career. You know, he was in the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie.
Mm-hmm.
In case people have forgotten, he was in Space Cowboys. in case people have forgotten. He was in Animal House, which didn't make the cut for me, but he's done some period pieces as well. He was in The Dirty Dozen. Did you remember this?
I did.
Yeah. He was in the one best picture in 1980, Ordinary People. He's heartbreaking in that, but it's, you know, most people will not have seen it. So I'm going to go now with his top five roles. Coming in at number five, I'm going to go ahead and say the one that probably most is probably top of the list for most people as far as name recognition with him, and that's Hawkeye Pierce from the 1970 movie MASH by Robert Altman. An iconic anti-war film, probably, you know, it's kind of a generation gap movie in a way. I think people a little bit older than us, they think the movie greatly like dwarfs the TV series. I think for people our age that grew up in the later 70s, 80s, I think the TV series dwarfs the movie. But
you know, so I think if you say for most people in pop culture, if you say Hawkeye Pierce,
they think Alan Alda.
I agree with you. Great role, great movie.
People that are a little bit older than us, though, I think they prefer the movie. I think that's kind of a trendy thing for them to say. Number four, the second, it's a remake of a movie from the 50s. I don't know his character name in the movie, but he's fantastic in it. It's Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He is really, really good in this movie. And so I would have it. And it's a paranoia-filled sort of – it's great, great movie. Number three, it's a movie that sort of gave us a glimpse, for the most part, of what Will Smith could do, but Donald is fantastic in it. 6 Degrees of Separation. I think he's great in the movie. I think the movie is fantastic. And I think he's wonderful in it. Now I can safely say number two, the role, his number two most best role is as President Snow in the Hunger Games 4-part movie series. He is so good in it. As much as you love Jennifer Lawrence, in some ways, he's the best part of the movie in a lot of ways. His character is so calculating and evil and just.
He's the only character in that movie. That, or I should say, the only actor in that movie that seems to be having any fun playing his role.
Yeah.
You know? Exactly. I like that series. It's well done. It's a pretty good adaptation of a book series.
He's so good in it.
And he makes it worth watching because in the book series, I thought they each got harder to read after the first. He mitigates that some, I think, with his performance.
But number one, this is, again, a movie from the 70s, which was pretty much his heyday. This is a movie called The Day of the Locust. And it's somewhat about Hollywood at the 1930s, 40s, whatever. And it's based on a novel. And his character name in the movie is Homer Simpson. So already he gets...
this has several layers of being a person.
So many. It's layers upon layers upon layers. I think it's a great movie. It's set in like Depression era Hollywood, and he's great in it. He really is. It's got Burgess Meredith. It's got Jackie Earle Haley.
You know, looking just at the IMDb page for Donald Sutherland, he's been in a lot.
Oh my gosh,
a lot of stuff. A lot of supporting roles, bit roles, a working man's actor. It'll be good to see the Academy.
He's not turning down much.
It'll be good to see the Academy recognize him. One role that I just was thinking of as you were going through, this little independent film with Pacey Witter called The Northern Lights, where he plays Pacey's
I've not seen The Northern Lights. Good.
It's an indie, Canadian indie movie. It's fine. I like Donald Sutherland. There's something about him. It's just kind of like a warm glass of milk. You just feel kind
it of is. It's very reassuring. It's very comforting. Yeah.
Well, listeners, we're reassured that after 50 episodes, we hopefully still have at least a few of you listening and with us. You spent now about a day and maybe change. Like Brian said, talking about movies, listening with us as we talk about movies. Please join that conversation, and we'll start using that in these podcasts. Anything you want to tell us on Twitter at 10K Movies or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com, and be a part of the show that way. Thanks again so much for downloading, listening, sharing this with a friend. We hope that as Oscar season goes on, you will get to see many of these films and form your own opinions. And as always, we hope that your next week will be a 10
plus
borderline 11.